claims period covers drinking water advisories from November 20th, 1995 until June 20th, 2021. Looking at a map on the website firstnationsdrinkingwater.ca, it's striking to me how many communities across the country experienced a drinking water advisory of that description, just in New Brunswick alone, including Fort Folly First Nation, which is located near Sackville. And I was just wondering, could you share any details about the drinking water advisory that affected that community?
I'm not in a position, obviously, to speak on behalf of the community, but I do, the information that we have about it is that there was a drinking water advisory that lasted from March 6, 2002 until May 24th, 2005. It's a long time to be without clean, safe drinking water in your homes. And so people in that community will be eligible to make claims if they lived on the reserve that was under those that drinking water advisory for at least a year or more. One thing that I should mention around that does impact particularly Fort Folly because of the dates of that advisory is that there are federal laws around limitations that prevent adults or that limit the amount of time that adults have to bring a legal action after an event happens. And so for people that were born before November 20th, 1995, so that's going to be folks that are roughly 26 or older, they're not going to be eligible to make a claim based on these dates because they're only eligible to make claims for drinking water advisories that happened between November 20th, 2013 and the end date of our claim period, which is June 20, 2021.
So people 26 or older would not be eligible.
Exactly. Yeah. But for people that are 26 or under, people that were born on or after November 20th, 1995, they're going to be able to make claims as long as they were living on reserve for at least a year during those dates. When you're under the age of 18, those limitations periods don't run for you. So they don't start running until you're under the age of 18. And the other piece is too that like there are exceptions for people who have physical or mental conditions that mean that they can't bring those claims forward. But for the most part, for most folks, that limitation period does start running when the event happens. But I mean, it's really hard for a lot of people to have suffered under these drinking water advisories and to not be eligible for compensation under this class action. I think it's important to note there that's not fully the end of the story because there are a few other pieces to the settlement that are still important and hopefully can help those people. One is that First Nations who sign on to the settlement agreement will receive a base payment of $500,000, and they'll also receive an amount equal to 50% of the damages paid to the individuals living on that nation's reserve. So that money goes directly to the First Nation. There are no strings attached. They get to do what they want with that money. Obviously, we don't have any business telling communities how to spend their money. So they get to distribute that money how they wish. And the second piece is that, you know, truthfully, there's no amount of money that can compensate for the harms that people experience living under these kinds of long-term drinking water advisories. Those harms are extraordinary. And so is compensation an important piece? Of course it is. A big piece in this was also the forward-looking relief. So we've got a commitment from Canada to make all reasonable efforts to ensure that class members have regular access to safe, clean drinking water in their homes and have enough of that drinking water to do all the things that Canadians use drinking water for. So not just drinking, but like laundry and dishes and whatever else you might need that water for. Canada's made that binding commitment and they also have committed to spend at least $6 billion to back that commitment up, which is sort of, it's a floor, not a ceiling. They have to spend at least that. But if it costs more than that to get First Nations water infrastructure up to speed, then they have to spend more than that. And that commitment is for all First Nations, not just First Nations that are a part of this settlement. So, you know, it is really hard. The compensation piece and the limitations period piece is really hard, but hopefully there are aspects of this settlement that can still help folks.
How many First Nations across the country are eligible for compensation in total? It's hard to convey just how busy this map is with all these just dotted at, across the country with, it looks like hundreds of communities.
I think it's 262, although that exact number may shift if those are the communities that we've identified at this
I
point.
see. And how much compensation is available for an individual who might have been affected, who might be eligible for this?
Yeah, so the exact amount of compensation that's going to be available to individuals is it will be determined based on the total number of claims that are made, and the amounts, like the number of years that the various people were living under the advisories, the amounts, the rough amounts, and it varies depending on the type of advisory that you were living under, but the rough amounts are about 1300 per year for a boil water advisory, about 1650 per year for an order not to consume the water, and about 2000 per year for a do not use advisory, so not being able to use the water at all. And then for First Nations that are remote First Nations, it's going to be that higher level of about 2000 per year. Those numbers, though, are all rough, and they're subject to change depending on, like I said, the amount of claims of eligible claims that are made. The other piece that I should say is that for that individual members can make claims for if they suffered injuries under the drinking water advisory as a result of not having access to clean, safe drinking water. They can make claims for those injuries. All that's set out in the claims form, but the amounts of they will also be compensated sort of separately for that. We got involved in all of this. OKT got involved in all of this because of Mishkandiga First Nation, who is one of the representative plaintiffs in the class action, and they'd been under a boil water advisory for about 25 years, I think, when the class action started, and had been evacuated multiple times as a result of their drinking water advisory. They decided that, that was enough, and they wanted to take action. And them, alongside with Sitasquiak Cree Nation and Curve Lake First Nation, they've led the charge on all of this. Canada has acknowledged how important this issue was. So, a couple of years, a few years in litigation, obviously, is not that long of a period of time for compared to most litigations, but it's a huge amount of time when you think about the amount of suffering in these communities. And there was definitely an urgency to get something done on this, make sure that this stopped and that First Nations had clean drinking water on their reserves, which obviously, is that's not where we are yet, but hopefully we've moved forward on that path and have a clearer path to getting there.